Welcome to Verowind, Serious Crimes, from StoryOmniverse.com. This story is titled, The Silent Injection. The streets remember, the files are open, and the case begins now. Chapter 1, The Morning Fog. Detective Mira Lawrence stepped out of her vehicle as the first rays of pale light crested over the jagged cliffs of Driftwood Cove. The fog was thick along the marina, swirling around battered boats and silent piers. She paused, the briny wind sharp in her lungs, and took in the crowd that had gathered, faces pinched with worry, arms crossed against the chill and each other. The Verowind Serious Crimes Unit had been summoned before dawn, after a frantic call from the harbormaster. Now, a child's small body lay beneath a canvas sheet on the dock, surrounded by tape, and the low murmur of anxious onlookers. Mira moved forward past the wary stares and crouched beside Dr. Ivo Grell, the team's medical examiner. Dr. Grell's voice was somber. No obvious trauma. No drowning. We'll need the autopsy, but there's a faint mark on the arm, possible injection. Mira glanced back at the crowd. Local fishermen, marina workers, and a young couple, parents by the looks of them, stood apart, clinging to each other's hands. She caught their eyes, saw the depth of their grief, and something else. Fear, thick as the fog. Elias Van, the SCU's digital forensic specialist, arrived with his portable kit. "I'm pulling footage from the dot cameras," he told Mira quietly. "But some are mysteriously corrupted.
Deliberate?"
"Maybe," Mira replied. "We need to work fast and carefully. The Cove doesn't trust outsiders. They'll close ranks if we push too hard." Yara Novik, their negotiator, approached the crowd, trying to break through the wary silence. Mira watched as Yara offered gentle words, but the townsfolk kept their distance, eyes darting between the body and the detectives. Secrets hung in the air, heavy and unspoken. As Dr. Grell zipped the small body bag, Mira felt a chill that had nothing to do with the morning breeze. A child was dead, a community on edge, and the investigation had only just begun. Chapter 2, Fractured Lines. The SCU set up their command post in a borrowed office above the bait shop, its windows overlooking the restless sea. Nautical charts and faded photographs lined the walls, reminders that Driftwood Cove had always depended on the tides and the silence of its people. At the morning briefing, Mira outlined their immediate priorities. "We need to establish the child's identity and last movements. Yara, focus on the family. Elias, see if you can recover any corrupted footage." Yara nodded. "The parents, Addison, I think, are rattled. They're scared, not just grieving. I'll see what I can learn." Dr. Grell joined them, holding up a sealed evidence bag. "Preliminary findings confirm an injection site. The substance is unknown. No history of chronic illness. The child was healthy." Elias tapped away at his laptop, frustration creeping into his tone. "Someone wiped the marina cameras, but not perfectly. There's a glitch segment around 2 in the morning. A shadow. Maybe an adult, but I can't make out features." Mira considered the information. "Whoever did this knew the area. They covered their tracks, but not well enough for a pro. That suggests insider knowledge." The Addisons, when Yara approached, were pale and unsteady. Mrs. Addison's hands shook as she answered. "He was supposed to be sleeping. We checked on him just after midnight. Then he was gone." Her husband stared at the floor, jaw clenched. "Did you see or hear anything unusual?" Yara asked gently. Mrs. Addison hesitated, glancing at her husband before whispering, "There's someone who warned us before. Said there'd be trouble if we talked to outsiders." Yara pressed for more, but the woman fell silent, eyes darting to the window as if afraid of being overheard. The family's fear was palpable, and Yara left with more questions than answers. Back at the office, Mira gathered her team. "This isn't just about a crime. It's about what people are willing to hide, and why," Chapter 3, Shadows in the Trees. The investigation's first real lead came from the periphery, Alaric Webb. The name surfaced in hushed conversations at the pub and in nervous side glances from the townsfolk. Alaric was a hermit, living in a rundown shack on the edge of the pine forest, rarely seen in town except to collect supplies. Local color or local menace? Elias quipped, scrolling through sketchy digital records. He bought a batch of solvents and syringes a few weeks ago. Could be nothing, but the timing's odd. Mira was wary. Driftwood Cove was famous for its wild rumors, and Alaric had been the scapegoat for everything from missing fish to haunted boats. Still, the purchase records and his reclusive nature made him a person of interest. She and Yara hiked through the woods, the trees muting all sound, to find Alaric's shack. The man answered their knock, eyes wary but lucid. His home was cluttered, but not sinister. Tools, old books, gardening supplies. "We're investigating the death at the marina," Mira began. "Can you account for your whereabouts last night?" Alaric's voice was quiet but steady. "I was here, alone. I don't sleep well. Heard an owl, nothing else." Yara scanned the room. No sign of children, nothing overtly suspicious. "You made some unusual purchases recently. Solvents? Syringes?" Alaric shrugged. "That's for my greenhouse. I grow rare orchids. They need special care. You can check." They did. Behind the shack, a lean-to housed rows of delicate flowers. The equipment accounted for. Alaric watched them, resigned. "People think the worst," he said softly. "But the real danger in this town is never out here. It's closer than you think." Returning to town, Mira admitted, "He's not our killer. Someone's trying to point us in the wrong direction." Elias confirmed, "The purchase records were flagged, but the timestamps don't line up. Someone wanted us to find Alaric. The shadows of Driftwood Cove were deeper than they looked, and someone was hiding in plain sight." Chapter 4, The Family's Silence. Days passed in a haze of interviews and dead ends. The townsfolk grew restless, their suspicion of the SCU hardening. At the Addison's home, Yara's persistence finally paid off. Mrs. Addison, exhausted and pale, let her in and closed the curtains tight. "We can't talk." "Not really," Mrs. Addison whispered, clutching her mug. "It's not safe. There's people here. People who know things. Powerful people." Yara leaned forward. "You're safe with us. We can protect you and your husband. If you have any idea who might have threatened you, we need to know." Tears welled in Mrs. Addison's eyes. "It started after my husband took a job at the private clinic. He overheard something. He wouldn't tell me what, just that we had to keep our heads down." Yara pressed gently. "Did you notice anyone watching you? Or did your son mention anything strange?" Her hand trembled. "Sometimes we saw a car parked outside after dark. My husband spoke with someone. He said it was just work, but he seemed frightened." When Yara relayed this to Mira, the detective's mind churned. The clinic had come up twice now, and the Addisons clearly lived in fear. Meanwhile, Elias finally restored a segment of the corrupted dock footage. A shadowy figure, medium build, moved with purpose along the pier, pausing near the child's last known location. The quality was poor, but the walk suggested someone familiar with the marina. Mira called a late meeting. "This isn't random. The clinic's involved, and someone is intimidating the Addisons. Driftwood Cove's silence is not just grief, it's self-preservation." The team agreed. They needed to look closer at the clinic and those who moved freely between the town's two worlds, the everyday and the secret. Chapter 5, Currents of Power. The next morning, Mira received a summons to meet Counselor Brell from Marlowe. The official's office was all polished wood and thinly veiled threats. "The Cove's reputation is delicate. Brell began, not bothering with pleasantries. I'm sure you appreciate the need for discretion. It's in everyone's interest that this case is wrapped up swiftly and without scandal. Mira kept her tone neutral. We're doing everything by the book, counselor. His eyes were cold. Let's hope your investigation doesn't dredge up unnecessary trouble for honest people. Driftwood Cove has its way of handling things. Back at the command post, Mira relayed the conversation. Political heat is rising. They want a tidy resolution, likely with a scapegoat. We can't let that cloud our judgment. Elias pushed aside his laptop. I've checked the clinic's digital records. Most are clean, but some appointment logs are missing. Someone tried to erase them. Dr. Grell entered, carrying lab results. The substance from the injection is a neuroinhibitor, not available commercially. It's used in experimental treatments, only a few sources in Verawind. Yara frowned. Is the clinic licensed for that? Dr. Grell shook his head. Not officially, but someone there has access. Mira's mind worried. Let's quietly build a list of clinic employees. If political pressure is mounting, whoever's responsible is getting desperate. The team felt the walls closing in. The truth was buried under fear, influence, and a town's desire for secrecy. For Mira, the stakes were suddenly much higher. Chapter 6, The Occult Veil. Dr. Grell summoned the team to his lab late that afternoon. He had spent hours re-examining the child's skin beneath special lights. Look here, he said, pointing to a faint, spiral-shaped marking near the injection site. It looks ritualistic. Some kind of occult sign? Yara's eyes widened. Has Driftwood Cove had any issues with cult activity? Mira shook her head. Rumors, mostly. But it could be a misdirection, either to scare us or to hide the real reason. She called in Celeste Arbor, a local historian known for her research on Verawind's traditions. Celeste pored over the symbol, then shook her head. This spiral pattern appears in old fisherfolk tattoos. It's not a cult, it's a luck charm. In this context, it's more likely to be a diversion than a declaration. Elias, meanwhile, found a curious detail. A recent surge in online searches from the clinic's IP address for ritual toxin symptoms and how to erase digital traces. Someone was researching both the substance and how to hide their trail. Mira pieced it together. Someone at the clinic is trying to throw us off with the occult angle, but their digital footprint betrays their anxiety. The team felt the new resolve. The occult misdirection was clever, but it had only bought the killer time. The real clues pointed elsewhere. Chapter 7, The Chemical Thread. With the occult angle dismissed, Elias returned to the clinic's supply chain. He unearthed an unusual order, a small quantity of a rare neuroinhibitor, signed out by Dr. Collis, the clinic's chief. The purchase had been billed to experimental research, a category not authorized at this facility. Mira and Yara interviewed Dr. Collis. The physician, polished and authoritative, admitted ordering the substance. For research only, of course. We never used it on patients, certainly not children. Elias triple-checked the delivery records. The dates matched the week before the child's death. Who else has access? Mira pressed. Collis hesitated. Our night nurse, Lessa. She handles inventory after hours. But she wouldn't. She's been with us for years. Yara requested to see the staff logs. Lessa's entries were routine. But on the night of the incident, there was a blank space. No record of her clocking out. Meanwhile, Dr. Grell clarified. The substance's effect is rapid. It would have caused fainting, then death within hours. The team was torn. Was Lessa hiding something, or was Collis manipulating the record to protect himself? Mira's instincts told her the answer was tangled deeper still. Chapter 8, Dead Ends and Doubt. Hoping to press Lessa, Yara invited her in for a private conversation. Lessa arrived hunched and anxious, hands twisting in her lap. I don't know anything about what happened, she stammered. I only do stock checks. I never saw the Addison's boy, not once.
You didn't log out the night of the death, Yara observed. Lessa's face creased with frustration.
The computer was down, again. It's always glitching. Check the maintenance log.
Elias investigated, and sure enough, found a service ticket from that night. The computer's clock had frozen, and Lessa had filed a report. Digitally timestamped, after her supposed shift. Mira sighed. Another dead end. Someone is playing us, using both Alaric and Lessa as convenient distractions. But the purchase order is still key. Dr. Grell found one more piece, a partial fingerprint on the vial. It wasn't Lessa's. He ran it through the town's records, but there was no match until Elias cross-referenced it with the clinic's hiring files. The print belonged to Dr. Collis himself. The team sat in weary silence as realization dawned. If Collis was the only one handling the substance, Yara said, why create all this misdirection? What's he so afraid of? Mira answered, exposure, but exposure of what?
Chapter 9, The Truth Unveiled. The final piece fell into place as Elias uncovered deleted messages on the clinic's internal server. The correspondence was between Dr. Collis and an unnamed recipient, discussing a failed trial and a threat of whistleblowing. The tone was frantic. Collis was terrified the Addisons would talk. Mira confronted Collis in his office, accompanied by Yara and Dr. Grell.
You knew the Addisons overheard your illegal activities, Mira said. You threatened them. When you realized their child had wandered into the clinic area, maybe saw too much, you panicked.
Collis's composure cracked. It's not what you think. I never meant for the child to die. I just wanted to scare them. I injected a diluted dose, just enough to cause a fainting spell.
Dr. Grell's voice was gentle. The substance is unpredictable. Even a small amount can be fatal in children.
Collis slumped, shock and guilt mingling on his face.
I thought I could fix it.
Cover it up. I've built this clinic from nothing. If word gets out, Mira's voice was quiet but unyielding. A child is dead, doctor. No secret is worth that. As Collis was taken into custody, the truth rippled through Driftwood Cove like a storm tide, sweeping away lies, leaving only sorrow and a hope for healing.
Chapter 10, Tides of Change. The SCU's work was nearly done, but the aftermath lingered. Driftwood Cove was awash in confusion and anger. Some residents mourned Dr. Collis's downfall. Others grieved the loss of innocence. The Addisons, finally able to speak, described the months of intimidation and the relief that came with the truth. Political officials attempted to spin the outcome. But the facts were plain. The SCU had uncovered not just a crime, but the rot hiding beneath the town's surface. Yara sat with Mrs. Addison in the quiet of her kitchen, listening as she wept and spoke of her son's gentle spirit. Elias, who had labored over every bite of corrupt data, found comfort in the knowledge that his work had brought a measure of justice. Dr. Grell volunteered to help the town review its medical practices, hoping to build trust where it had been lost. Mira, standing at the edge of the marina one last time, let the wind carry away the case's final grim details. We did what we came to do, she told her team as they packed to leave. We found the truth, despite the shadows. Yara nodded, and maybe, just maybe, the cove will let in a little more light. United by the ordeal, the SCU left Driftwood Cove behind, ready to face the next storm. You've been listening to Verawind, Serious Crimes, part of StoryOmniverse.com. The case may be closed, but the shadows of Verawind linger still.